Show business is riddled with hyperbole, exaggeration, and sham. Maybe like the rest of life. Dullards are acclaimed for genius. Cruel people get awards for humanitarianism. People say brilliant, when they probably mean okay. But here's an observation that's probably unimpeachable. The best actor ever to come out of Toowoomba, Australia, is Geoffrey Rush. Over the last couple of years, he has also been acclaimed as one of the best actors in the world. Mr. Rush is nominated for another Academy Award this year for his role in Philip Kaufman's film, Quills. Mr. Rush plays the Marquis de Sade, when the Marquis was imprisoned in an asylum for his writings.
Homo perversio, a species that thrives in captivity.
Oh, Marquis, this is Dr. Rhea Kalar. He's joining us here in
an advisory capacity.
Welcome to our humble madhouse, Doctor. I trust you'll find yourself at home.
Michael Caine, of course, also in that clip. The Oscars will be given out later this month, but Geoffrey Rush joins us now from our studios in Los Angeles. Mr. Rush, thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I believe you're almost certainly the first person from Toowoomba we've ever had on this program.
I loved your introduction because it's sort of, no one's actually mentioned that. And I flashed back to my childhood. I left Toowoomba when I was 8. And people often say, what made you an actor? And I say, well, I was lucky enough to see the tail end of, like, travelling variety and vaudeville shows that were still managing to do the tent circuit in the late 50s before we got television. And they would create, you know, magical shows for kids in a big canvas proscenium arch tent. It was like they were trying to recreate the London Palladium in the outback. And that was Toowoomba for me.
And can you remember sitting there thinking, I can do that?
Not that I can do that. I remember sitting there thinking, this is not what I see when I leave this place. You know, something special. There's an event happening here that is of reality, but it's something else.
Yeah. You were, I have read, also a mime in Paris.
I went to an amazing school in the mid-70s. I'd done about 3 years of professional work as a young actor. I wasn't sure where I was heading. I knew that I had a bent for the extreme edges of the repertoire, that I was not looking for a conventional text-based drama school. Mm-hmm. And the Jacques Lecoq school, it was really like a study of sort of European-based actor traditions, not through text. Buffoon, Commedia dell'arte, looking at clowning, the movement of Greek chorus. Just a fantastic 2 years of my life.
I think people have noted that in your portrayals, there does seem to be a greater emphasis on the physicality. I mean, certainly in Shine, but as the Marquis also, particularly somebody who has to express himself through physicality when the power of speech is deprived.
People often ask, how do you begin to tackle that sort of character? You know, and there are elements of research, I think, that you have to get into. An understanding of that turbulent period of European history, the nature of revolution, the impact of the reign of terror, what's it like being incarcerated in an asylum as a political prisoner when you're not actually officially insane, what's it like being an aristocrat, you know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff you can read about, talk about, absorb. But there was this one key image in the play script where the priest refers to the Marquis as behaving like a demented peacock. And as an actor, I go, that is a very powerful and resonant and unpredictable image, and I'm going to subliminally always keep that in the back of my head, you know.
Once again, gentlemen, I'm just a lowly cobbler. I have been all my life, and with this shoe, I'm asking you to be a cobbler's wife. It's a dreadful play, true. A festering pustule on the face of literature. But you need not make it worse. Say your lines with conviction, my happy little shoemaker. Like a true actor.
But I'm not an actor. I'm a dyspeptic.
Just seducer. You goon.
The demented peacock, yeah.
Mm.
So you get,
because it gives you an aspect. It gives you something behavioral,
yeah,
to play with, and something, it helps you with locomotion for a character, you know.
What attracted you to this part?
I suppose the sheer audacity of it. I knew of the Marquis de Sade from my university days. 30 years ago. He wasn't on the curriculum, but he was certainly the book that other students would slip to you and say, read this, this is insane. You know, and at that stage, he was kind of a countercultural icon. And I was reading, you know, Rabelais, Gargantua and Pantagruel, and listening to Lenny Bruce and thinking, and, you know, Henry Miller was sort of another secret bomb that people would pass to you. And they all seemed to have in common this great, they were like great stoned raves, you know, where someone would grab an idea and spin 20 pages out of it, and you were sort of going, wow, this is so cool, you know. So the Marquis was part of that.
When you sat down or stood up or walked around to ponder the Marquis, how much of history was on your mind? How much was the idea of understanding somebody across the centuries? How much did that grip you? And how much was the idea that you just had to make a movie?
Equal doses. The Marquis comes to us as such a legendary, demonized, tabloid ink blot. You don't know where to begin to look into it and see, well, how do we make this real and interesting for contemporary viewers? Because you think, well, we're not really doing a biopic and we're not doing a documentary, so it's not worth looking at existing engravings of the man to mimic the likeness. I have to find, who is this imprisoned, tantrum-throwing diva, former glam rock star of the Ancien Régime, you know, holding court in his deluxe suite in this lunatic asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Wright, who wrote the screenplay, has himself said, I mean, he wrote it in a way that, in a style, without denigrating it, I like to refer to it as high art, B grade. He likes to think that the Marquis was holding the pen as he wrote it, so that it has a Sardian kind of aspect to it. You know, Sard's novels, in some degrees, were the trash novels of his time. But at the same time, he was also putting young female characters into the center of the story and pitching them up against the world, where they have to come up with very resilient and powerful moral choices. And the sort of the bleakness and the harshness and the lurid forces that he pits them against make for fascinating reading.
There's a laundrymaid, I guess we call her, portrayed by Kate Winslet in the film, who, when the Marquis is forbidden to write anymore, is bereft and heartsick because she, as you suggest, saw herself in those stories pitted against the world and begs him as a kind of last gift to construct a story for her. And he comes up with a way of doing it by enlisting the other inmates. Let's have that clip.
To my beloved reader, prepare yourself for the most impure tale ever to spring from the mind of man. Off your hop. To my beloved reader, prepare yourself for the most impure tale ever told. To my beloved reader, prepare yourself for an impure tale. Bonjour. To my beloved reader, prepare yourself. I've an impure tale to tell.
Prepare yourself.
Bouchon, what did you say?
Prepare yourself. I've a tale, an impure tale.
The inmates passing the story on line by line between the Marquis de Sade and the laundry maid. We don't get to hear the end of the story, and without giving away too much, this story winds up hurting someone.
Absolutely.
And how do you feel about the Marquis' refusal to feel a sense of responsibility over that?
Well, I gather it's part of that kind of personality that there is no sense of consequence, impervious to how other people might feel about his actions. I think for Doug, it was a very significant and important part of his debate. He didn't want it to be a freewheeling set of cozy, comfortable, liberal ideas about freedom of speech being, well, you know, just let people do what they want. He wanted to show that there were consequences to this, and in some cases these consequences can be dire, but that is part of why the debate needs to be kept forceful and alive. And I think maybe Phil and maybe Doug are suggesting that there is going to be aberrant random behavior out there that's not directly responsible from the ideas contained in art. It's one aspect of human behavior that is always going to exist, and we can't blame art for creating it.
I guess that raises the question as to how you see your role as an actor at some point. Do you have any larger idea of what you hope to do with work after work that you swing together?
You can wander around a lot of aspirations in your head as to what you think it is. Shakespeare gives you some good clues. You know, one of them is to chronicle the time. I think that's important, to reflect ourselves back to ourselves in an entertaining way. For an actor, the big danger is self-regarding. Then you start to get into vanity and arrogance. You know what I mean? And that can destroy what glimmer of play is there.
Yeah.
And play is important to me. I think it is something that we lose from. Once hormones come into our life, we stop playing as a way of discovering the world. And maybe acting is the desire to reclaim a little of that in our adult experience.
Mr. Rush, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Jeffrey Rush, of course, nominated for an Academy Award for his starring role as the Marquis de Sade in the movie Quills, speaking from Los Angeles.